Look at that. When they tap out, they know we're ready to go.
Oh, they tapped out.
When Margo and Josh go to just their names and there's no picture in the screen, that means they think we're going.
I know. I love that they identify when we're actually going to start, and they're like, "Oh, I think it's on." Click off.
Because we were just talking about Beat Bobby Flay or whatever it's called.
Yeah, Beat Bobby Flay, which is on TV right now. I'm in my hotel room in Albuquerque. I just finished a job. Well, not my job. I just finished a day's of work, and now I'm here working again with you, Joseph.
Look at that. We were just saying, I think that show is great, except the outfits that Bobby wears are just a little too perfect for me. The little shirts, the plaid shirts that are the right length untucked, and then the whole kit and caboodle.
Maybe it's that company Untuck It, you know?
Yeah,
Untuck It, which is a great idea, by the way. You know, that guy's probably making gajillions.
Didn't you just vacation this summer in Untuck It?
But yeah, big hurricane hit Untuck It.
So I just saw the most disturbing story that Phil Collins is starting his farewell tour.
Oh.
I mean, I was such a huge Phil Collins fan. I still am. I think I love everything the guy's ever done.
Genesis. I love Genesis. I love
the
Phil
solo
Collins
stuff. But he's so frail that he's now doing the entire quote-unquote farewell tour seated with a cane.
Oh, well, you know what? Didn't he get divorced from his, like, 18th wife?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's got to be some sort of reasoning behind it. He's like, okay, I got to go make some dough.
Oh, you think the divorce sent him out on tour?
Yep.
In his new state.
I do.
I just think it's heartbreaking. I don't know if you've ever heard this story, but the song In the Air Tonight.
Yeah.
I got this on high authority.
Okay.
That Phil Collins was actually there and he saw somebody watching somebody drown. And that person didn't help him or report it. And that is really insider information.
Wait a minute. But I thought he debunked this whole thing though. Cause
I don't believe that. But I heard that from a great source.
How could it be that great? Like, don't reveal your source. Does he know Phil Collins?
He's heard that Phil actually was there. And he saw somebody watch somebody drowning, and that person didn't report it or help. And this was his payback.
And then he wrote a song about it.
Right. And now he would have had to have helped. I mean, he could have helped, right?
Yeah.
If he was there and he saw the other guy, I saw what you did. If you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. So Phil Collins is actually guilty by association for not, and I think it's
why does this make me laugh? Oh my God.
I think it's time that he get brought in on some sort of charges
of some kind.
I just think it's fascinating, honestly, just to stop. That I don't care how old you are,
right,
where you grew up,
right,
everybody has heard that story.
Yeah.
Of you know what the story is behind In the Air Tonight.
All right.
Phil Collins actually saw a guy.
Yeah.
Who was watching a guy drown?
Yeah.
And he wrote this, and I mean everybody.
I know, but you have this on good authority.
No, I have another source that is totally verified.
No,
that Phil was there.
What are you talking about? Wait a minute. So you Are you so confident of this? Like, do you?
I have started the early work on having charges brought against Phil Collins for not for not stepping in and helping.
Oh wait, man, hold on. Someone's at my door. Hold on.
Come a knock on our door.
Oh shit! Here we go. Back again.
What is this? What is this?
It's my dessert.
You're not supposed to be eating dessert. You're supposed to be leaning out for your roll.
I know. It's not happening.
What are you having, sorbet?
No.
Ask that person if he's ever heard about Phil Collins being implicated in a drowning death.
They got two desserts.
What is happening with you? I'm with you. There's nothing better than on being on the road in a hotel room and getting dessert.
Oh yeah, two desserts. I got some sort of a mint thing, and then some. I don't know, man.
This is like your treat at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's hard being in a hotel room for so long. I just eating like shit. I'm drinking so much, and I don't know. Like, I've worked out one time. I ran 2 miles. 2 days ago and pretty much almost died, you know? Oh, I've got to get my life back on track.
Oh my God. Now you're working and you're not taking care of yourself.
Well, the anxiety got me all ripped and shredded because I was like so anxious. It just burned fat off. And now, you know, I feel good, but I'm eating again and drinking and, you know, smoke them.
Well, I would make that trade. As your very good friend, I would make the trade of you being fat and happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Then anxious and thin.
I know. Do you think Phil Collins has anxiety?
Not anymore. He's hoping that people are, you know, filling arenas so he can pay off number 18.
Oh, that was a good laugh, man. That was a good laugh. Shit.
I was thinking about that all day. I'm like, I can't wait to bring this up with Oliver because I knew, even though we've never talked about it, that you knew all about that.
I did. I did.
So the show's going well.
Show's going well. This is my longest stint away from home. It's been about 6 or 7 days, so it's not so bad. But no, I'm having fun, man. I'm having fun. The lead girl, this girl Elodie, is really a really good actor and fun to work with, and it's great, dude. I'm pleasantly surprised. I will say that.
Are you falling in love on set?
No. No. No.
No.
I don't fall victim to that, really. You know, but it is an interesting subject, you know, because you are sort of mashed together with these people for 3, 4, 5, 6, however many months. And you live in this bubble and it's, you know, hard to maintain a relationship as two actors because you can get caught up in all the bullshit. You know, I think that growing up with it and in it, it took that allure sort of away.
Yeah.
You know, but it is. It's intoxicating. You know what I mean? You're with each other and you're creating and, you know, you're emoting together and all the bullshit. And, you know, you get lost in it. That's why people fucking have affairs on movie sets all the time.
Right. I mean, true or false, and you don't have to answer this if it's awkward, but your mom fell in love with Billy Barty from Foul Play.
Yeah. No one knows that.
But you're willing to say right now on our podcast, hoping to get clicks, that your mom and Billy Barty, who played an encyclopedia and or Bible salesman in Foul Play, had a long, long running affair from beyond, not just on the set of Foul Play, but beyond.
Yeah. I mean, there's still questions of whether or not he's my father.
Right. Okay. Good. I know it's awkward and it's weird to talk about, but
no, I know. But you know, actually, my mom met Kurt on a movie set. You know, so there you go. Swing Shift.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
Was on Swing Shift. Well, Kurt actually met me before he met my mom, because my mom was dating this guy who was in the business. He wasn't an actor. And he played baseball. And they were in this softball league, I guess. And Kurt was there playing in this game. And my mom's boyfriend brought me to the softball game. And I was sort of this weird, awkward little five-year-old kid. And Kurt was like, "Who's that?" You know, and his name was Jerry, this other dude. And he's like, "Oh, that's it's Goldie's kid."
Jerry Stiller.
Jerry Stiller, yeah. Jerry Stiller, R.I.P. And Kurt said, Jerry was like, "Yeah, this is, it's Goldie's kid." And then Kurt said, "Hey, come off the stuff." I was sitting in the stands, and he called me down, and we had a catch. Because I had my glove. And so Kurt and I had a catch. This is before he even met my mom on Swing Shift. And then months later, he's doing Swing Shift with my mom. And that's that.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more from Oliver and Me. You know what's weird is the use of kids as props and or pawns. Not that that even remotely describes what happened in the story you just told. But when my dad, and I talked about this in my book, so I think it's fair game. I don't think we've talked about this on this podcast. When my dad, the whole reason why my book is called Lucky Bastard, my dad meets my mom in 1968. And in 1969, I pop into the world. My mom and dad get married prior to me popping into the world, but not prior to me popping into my mom. If that makes sense.
Yeah. But just that phrase "popping in your mom" doesn't sound good.
As an embryo, as a baby, as a little baby.
Does your mom listen to this show?
God no. My mom. I wish to God my mom could text. She's 83, even though she admits to being 81. again, she doesn't listen. But if she could text, it would just free up so much more time in my life. She will call.
Yeah.
We'll talk. She'll have another thought. She'll call back. And she doesn't really realize that if I don't pick up, I still know she called because of the caller ID.
Right.
And so it's just call, 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 call. I pick up. Yes. What? Are you okay? I'm fine. I just had another thought of, then I'm already lined up to get frustrated and mad, which I know surprises you. And she's, it's unbelievable. It's just over and over. And then we'll talk about something serious and she'll have another thought and then she calls me back. Anyway, that's not the point of this. The point of what I was saying was how kids are used in divorce and or second marriages. Like when I was a little kid, I went with my dad multiple times to drop off the alimony check at my dad's ex-wife's house. Mm-hmm. I don't believe we've talked about this. If we have, then I beg everybody's forgiveness.
We have not.
So I was 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, going with my dad to the home of my dad's ex-wife and his 6 kids. Mm. And he is bringing kryptonite to the party, that being me, because I was the impetus for the whole switcheroo. And now I'm walking into this house and I'm not old enough to understand the entirety of the picture, but I am old enough to understand that I'm walking into a place where I'm not welcome. But I went with my dad. It's just like crazy to me that as a little kid my dad thought it was a wise decision.
God, that's weird.
To bring me with him as this little boy. And so I write this book, and my half-brothers and sisters, and I have 6 of them, whatever stress was there was multiplied by a million because I went through a lot of this stuff. And really the whole point of me bringing that up then or even now is that I understand why they, as little kids, would look at me and it's completely understandable because now I've been through a divorce myself. I tried to make every step perfect as best I could to, you know, make the change, but let my daughters know that they were always protected and they are always number one in my life. And so now here I am, you know, at the time, 40, getting divorced, and priority number one, because I lived through it as a kid, was making sure that these girls knew that they nothing was going to change in their standing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, I'm like, why was I there?
Yeah.
Why was I brought into this thing? And it was just in your face, like for these kids that had to deal with that.
Well,
so
but did he bring you on purpose? Do you think? Do you think there was any strategy there?
Maybe as defense. I don't know. As a screen between him and a really tense situation. Like we're not gonna have some brawl verbal in front of this little boy, but. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, having gone through therapy now, it is the root of everything that I am and all of the insecurities I have and, you know, wanting to be loved and wanting to be liked and reading stuff on the internet and reading stuff on Twitter and you're awful and you suck and it's a good thing you had a famous parent and all that other stuff. It goes right to the core of who I am. And I think those seeds were sown when I was a little boy going, this doesn't feel like the other situations I've been in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame them one bit. That's a normal kid reaction. So I'm bringing it up because we were talking about something with regard to kids. And I feel like, or with you, with Kurt.
Yeah.
And Goldie, and that's a happy story, but it also there's a lot of bullshit that happens to kids that just get caught in the middle of all this
stuff. I mean, I it's funny when you say that, sort of viewing it from their perspective, your half brothers and sisters, seeing this little product of whatever happened with your mom, with your dad and your new mom.
Well, I think we can do the math there. We know what happened.
They made love.
They made love.
And then you came out. But here's the thing. It's been 100 years. You know, how come, why isn't it better? Or
it's been 53 years.
This is
that I know.
Right. So, but is there still bitterness? Or is there still stuff? Or is it all water under the bridge, but you're just too old now, and who gives a shit, and everyone's doing their own lives.
Yeah, it's kind of that. I mean, it's not like we're going to Christmas together, and it's awkward.
Right.
It just was never that way, except the odd thing is, and I know you're dying to eat your dessert, the sad thing is...
I'm watching it melt in front of my eyes.
I know. Go eat. We used to do this Christmas show every Christmas, so we would have our Christmas presents amongst family on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas morning, we would get up, and for the longest time, we would go down to the radio station here where my dad was, a huge radio station, 50,000 watt clear channel station, whatever. And we would do this Christmas program, and it would be my dad, my mom, his eight kids, two of which were myself and my sister, and then the six other ones, and then singers and priests and pastors and rabbis and whatever, everybody coming in telling stories like a variety show. And then eventually it migrated to our house. So that was all going on like at our house every Christmas morning. And that's when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, the other kids are coming over and, you know, here we are and there's my mom and it's Christmas and it's just, it's all I knew. So it was normal. But as I look back, it was tense, you know, and it was odd.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I have half brothers and sisters and I don't see them, you know, I feel like I should, I guess. I think once things shore up with my dad a little bit, maybe. I don't know. But, you know,
You waiting for this tectonic shift for things to shore up with your dad?
Oh, I don't even know. It's shored, if that's even a word. It's shored. No, but.
Shorn.
It's shorn. No, but here's fucking crazy. So I get a call from my dad. I didn't answer it. Well, I didn't get his call. And then he texts me. I'm in Albuquerque and he's actually coming to Santa Fe on October 1st. So
do you know the way to Santa Fe?
Is that what it is? Isn't it?
No, it's San Jose.
San Jose. So he's coming.
So are you going to go see him?
Yeah, of course.
Ah, bring a recorder. Let's get his ass on here. I have some questions for him.
I should. I seriously should. You know,
Bill, settle in. I've got 31 questions.
It's funny, though, because there's always a side of me that's sort of skeptical. You know, I mean, things are cool and we're going to hang. And he leaves this message and he wants to see me and blah, blah, of course. And there's no doubt. I don't doubt that. And then he's like, you know, and I've got this idea. I want to run something by you. And then immediately these red flags go up and it's probably not the right thing. It's not, you know, I think that's just sort of a reactionary behavior or this sort of, you know, protection mechanism, defense mechanism of some kind. But immediately I'm like, what the fuck?
And like, what do you think it is?
I don't know.
Another variety show with the Hudson family.
Well, you know what's funny, dude? I've been like, I don't know. I think about the weirdest shit. I was on set today, and you know, you daydream and your mind wanders. And I was thinking, what if I did a documentary on myself and like the Hudson brothers and bringing the Hudson brothers? Because my brother, my
God, uncle, please do.
They don't
please
even do. Talk. Mark, Brett, and Bill, my dad, they don't even speak to each other. And I was like, what if I am the guy to bring them back sort of together in a sense and them to write one more album and then deal with all the family stuff in the documentary, get into the depth, the details and the depths
God.
Of it. And then I
this
could.
This is your life's work right here. You're identifying it. And for people who are listening to our podcast who don't know, Oliver's dad and his two brothers, Mark and what's the other one?
Brett,
had a variety show. Yeah. We talked about this with Vedder, and I've said it 55 times in this podcast, but I was of the right age to go to New York and go to a show, a Wizard of Oz on Broadway, and your dad and his two brothers were the Lion, the Tin Man, and the Scarecrow from the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
So he was like a legit guy.
Yeah, they were known. They were known and they had music on the radio and they were they their band.
I think that would be phenomenal.
You know, but it's like taking a deep dive into my relationship with my dad and my uncles and their relationship as siblings and, you know, getting into sort of the Hudson lineage in a sense, all the while sort of bringing them back together to make one last album when they don't even speak right now. And they're all crazy talented. They still all make music. Uncle Mark, my dad, Brett, you know, they just do
not
it on
together.
They just do it on their own, right?
Yeah, this is like a Mighty Wind meets. I had another one that just flashed through my mind, but it's that's what it is. It's that would be so great.
Feel like it would be cool because it could be
it'd
gritty.
Be beyond cool. It would be a passion project
that
for you would solve, I think, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. It's like me writing my book. And I said to the publisher, I don't care if a million people buy this thing or one person buys this thing. And that person's me.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to write it. Mm-hmm. For you, first of all, it'd be well done.
Yeah.
And it would be really interesting to watch, but I think it would make you at your age in your mid 40s, like kind of complete again and have a whole section of your life. It's like a puzzle piece coming in.
Yeah. But you're right. Like you wrote your book for yourself in a way.
Yes.
You know, I and then success came, but it really didn't matter. It would have to be similar in that I'd have to do this just for me. And if it was great and got on the air somehow, great. you know, but because it's an odd subject, you know, it's me and
no,
my,
it's not. It's not.
I what I
it's
mean
the
is,
only reason I got on Stern is because of my half brothers and all the other stuff with my dad and divorce. This is a story that is everywhere in our society. This involves you, your dad, his two brothers, so many mm-hmm. tentacles that go out.
Yeah.
Now, who are you going to get in it? I don't know. Is your mom going to be a part of it? Is Kirk going to be a yeah. part of it? Is Kate going to no, be a part of it?
No,
is,
I don't think so. But
well, you don't know. I mean,
I don't
once
know.
It gets going.
Yeah. You know what I should do is just get like impersonators to play my family.
Get one of the Fanning girls to play, get Dakota Fanning to play Kate Hudson.
Wouldn't that be fucking funny if it's just like, it's like kind of like a mask, you know, like a
yeah,
they're not really my family, but they're just impersonating them.
Right. Kate, I've got this weird question. I don't need you in it. I just want you to sign off on L. Fanning playing you when we were
right. No,
yeah, that's
but great. By the way, I mean, with my sense of humor and sort of sensibility, it would be really funny to, you know, intercut reenactments, you know, that are like kind of overdone, but
just
reenactments.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, like reenactments of my memories of like when my dad was chasing the car. Well, vivid memory for me is like I was a kid and my dad was chasing my mom's car out of the driveway. We're backing up. And I am in the back seat of this station wagon looking out and I see my dad running and mom is, you know, backing up all furiously. And she literally like crashes through a white picket fence. I mean, boom.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I have that memory, but yeah, we could do.
I was saying, oh my God, because I just can't picture Goldie Hawn driving a station wagon.
We had a badass station wagon. The kind where you
we
sit.
We all did.
We kind of you sit in the back and look out the back
yeah,
window.
Yeah, like a country squire.
Yeah.
Station wagon.
I want to get one of those. I want to get one of those now. That would be an amazing car to get. But yeah, we could do reenactments throughout, and I can try to get really like famous actors to do the reenactments.
Right. But people who look nothing like the people.
Oh, no,
that,
nothing.
You know, like Goldie Hawn is played by.
Oh, yeah. I yeah, like know. Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder as Goldie Hawn was magical.
No, but
and then
you
can have Netflix fly around.
You're right. I mean, it could. It popped into my head today. It could be good. I don't know.
Was this during a scene that this happened in your head?
Between, you know, when they're turning the cameras around and you're setting up and, you know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're going to meet with your dad and your dad's going to be like, I have an idea.
Totally.
For a cookie company that, okay, I sell you 10 bags of cookies and now you have to go sell 12 to somebody else and they have to go sell 14 to the next person and then you make money off.
Oh, God. I'm like, Dad, come on. I'm very excited to hear what he has to say. I mean, I don't know what this idea is going to be.
Can you secretly record this
I can.
Meeting?
Yeah.
Wait, what's that, Dad? Can you talk a little louder? I can't. What's wrong with you, Oliver? Don't worry about it. Just, I can't. I'm having a little tough time. I got water in my ear. Just talk louder.
I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited to see him and hang out and do something. You know, I mean, we'll see.
What if you just end up doing peyote and walking out into the desert?
That would be incredible. I mean, imagine if I'm in the New Mexican desert with my dad, like smoking peyote and just dancing.
Is that what
around.
You do to peyote? You smoke that?
Yeah.
Look at you. Look what? At me. I don't know anything.
Well, I mean, I've never smoked peyote, but I know that you smoke it.
What do you do for ayahuasca? Do you drink that?
Did you put an H in front of it?
What is it?
Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah, that's like a tea. You drink it.
A tea.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
You drink it.
That seems pleasant.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Until you're looking at a dragon coming out. Khaleesi. Khaleesi.
You and I should do a very special episode of Daddy Issues and do ayahuasca and just do.
That'd be such a great final day of my career. I would love that.
Yes.
So Margot, eat your shit. It's piss. It's making me uncomfortable.
It's all right. I'm having a good time. Actually,
you're having a nice time.
Well, you know, it's always like I worked all day and you know, you come back to the hotel. I'm like, oh, I gotta do the fucking podcast. But the minute we get on, I say it every fucking time, but I enjoy it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
So
Margo put together some questions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I think they're so good.
Yeah, they are good. I have some right here.
Okay, I'm the one that always takes the lead on this. Why don't you take the lead on this and actually go pick what you want to pick?
Here's one from an anonymous message on Twitter. I genuinely want to know their stance on this topic. Pornography use as a husband and a father. Do they think it's okay? My wife is not really okay with it and views it as a form of cheating. It is something I have struggled with and would really be interested in hearing what the guys think and what their stance is. Take it, Joe, because I have thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know that of all the weird bullshit you and I have talked about over the years, I don't know that we've ever even talked about this.
No, we haven't.
And so it's a great question. I think it's fine. And I think when the question is, my wife is not really okay with it and views it as a form of cheating.
That seems crazy to me.
My gut reaction to that is cheating is cheating. And when I was in a previous life, the one thing I wouldn't do because of everything I said at the beginning of this podcast about, you know, going to somebody else's house and being as a little kid in this, and I am the result of this, you know, this thing that happened between two people. That was the one thing I wouldn't do, is I wouldn't cheat. So I think cheating is cheating. I think pornography, using it is not that big of a deal. I really don't. And I, you know, as an adult, I was listening to Stern today, and there was a woman called in that said that her 12-year-old is like on Pornhub.com or whatever it is. And
yeah,
now that's a different thing.
Well, that's
it was great to hear, because the woman said that she told her son exactly what you've said on this podcast, Oliver, which was, that's not real life. That's not how men treat women. That's not how men should treat women. Mm-hmm. That's not, this is not a real interaction. This is acting, and this is
entertainment.
This is for quote unquote entertainment. So I thought she had really good thoughts on it, but I do not personally see that as a form of cheating. And I would much rather somebody use that if they're away or it's been a while, than actually going and cheating.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I couldn't agree more. You know, and pornography use as a husband and a father. I mean, as a father, no. I mean, look, there's healthy pornography, meaning it, you know, every now and then you get in a little you put on some and you do a little bump bump bump, and you go look squeak squeak squeak, and you go quick 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 squirt squirt squirt, and then you're done. But if it becomes if you could become dependent on it, because pornography can be addicting. There is addiction to pornography. That's a real thing where you just can't stop and you fall into a hole. What happens is you become desensitized, meaning you start off with a little bit of, you know, erotica. And before you know it, you know, you're watching movies or clips that are horrific because you're just, you need more to get off. You know, then it can become a problem. But I would never say that it's cheating in any way whatsoever, you know. But I would say for this anonymous person to evaluate your love life, your sex life with your wife, you know. Do you feel like you need to watch porn? Do you need to get off with pornography because, you know, you don't have a solid intimate relationship? You know, I'd ask these questions. These are the surrounding questions.
And there, and the next, the follow up to that is, why does it bother you so much to the wife?
Right.
Is this really a form of cheating in your mind? And if so, you know, then changes have to be made, and there has to be a dialogue and a conversation about it. But yeah, I don't.
Yeah, and then just say to her, "Oh, you want to see cheating?" And then go off and then cheat, and then say, and then be like, "See, wouldn't you rather me just watch porn?"
See, no. No, don't do
that's
that.
Bad advice.
No. Yeah, that's bad advice.
Okay,
that's,
let's move on to the next question then.
When are you guys going to come out with your own alcoholic beverage? Who asked that? Our business manager?
I think that's Margot's question.
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, I just don't know what goes into that. Troy's coming out with a beer.
Is he?
I'm very happy for him about.
Oh, cool. We need to do it. We could do a drink. That would be fun. You know, I think we'd have to do something off-brand. Everyone's doing tequila. Everyone's doing vodka. You know, we need to do, like, organic wine. You know what I mean?
Ugh.
Okay, fine. No. How about like, rum?
I had a bad experience with rum in college. I've never had rum since.
Really?
Never. I hate the taste of rum. I hate the smell of rum. I hate the... Unless it's buried in some drink that has... 48 mixers.
Have you
in it,
been
but
on?
I,
have you ever been on a rum springa?
No. I had a bad rum a springa breaka, and I fucking
wow!
God.
You elevated it. You took it one step further. Very good. Let's see. This is good. What is something each of you have exaggerated to your kids about in order to scare them into listening to you? I actually don't do that, really. You know, I mean, your kids are older now, but I don't do that. I don't exaggerate or lie. I just scare them with reality, you know. But I remember one instance where Erin, my wife, she does that. She gives these false, insane threats where it's just you can never follow through, because I think it's important as a dad and as a parent to follow through with whatever threat, I guess it's a wrong word, but with whatever sort of...
Consequence,
thank you. But Erin always says these wild things, and there was one year, the kids were being nuts, and she's like, if you don't get in the car right now, we are not having Christmas. And I'm like, I look at her, I'm like, babe, I'm like, seriously? It's never going to happen. We're having Christmas no matter what. I mean, the kids could pretty much kill someone and we're going to have Christmas. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And she starts, Erin then starts laughing because she's like, I went a little far.
I was thinking, my wife and I talked about, Michelle and I talked about this years ago, that the timing of Lenny Bias dying.
Yeah.
After being the number one overall pick by the Boston Celtics and dying from what was diagnosed as cocaine use, and then the story came out, it was his first time. I'm telling you what, whatever time that was in my life, I feel like that was late 80s, and I'm terrible with the NBA. I would say it was 86, 7, 8, somewhere in there. That scared me straight, and I think I used... I think I used that example to my girls of what can happen. Like, hey, it can just be the, just take one time.
Yeah.
The only time. And to this day, I am convinced that if I ever did that,
you're going to die.
My heart would explode, not inside my chest, out of my chest. And so that just hit at the right time for me to always avoid that stuff. And I saw it in high school. I saw it as a kid. I saw cocaine. I was at a prom, and a guy who I see all the time now pulled a mirror off the wall in a hotel room. And I will never forget, spelled out "Coke is it" in cocaine at the end of a prom.
Wow.
On a mirror. And these kids were snorting it. And that was when ecstasy came out, and it didn't even have a name. It was it had a chemical,
MDMA,
MDMA, whatever the hell it was. And I'm watching these kids, my friends and others, like freaking out, like shivering and walking around and out of it. And I was like, it was the best night of school and education I got in high school, because it just I was like, that's not gonna be me.
Yeah.
And I stayed out of that forever, but thankfully that stuff scared me straight. So I think I used a lot of those examples to answer the question for my girls, and I feel like they've
threatened as a kid that, you know, I remember, because I wasn't doing well in school or whatever, and in elementary school, and I remember my parents threatening me with military school. They're like, "We're going to send you to military school." And I'm like,
"Oh, I got that."
And I was like, "No, you're not." I was like, "There's no fucking chance you're going to send me to military school."
I mean, your mom was Private Benjamin, for God's sake.
It didn't do a thing. It was very empty, because I was like, what? They're not going to like send me to military school. It's crazy.
Oh, God. That's so funny. So this person, any update on the monkey lock? So the other night, if you didn't hear that episode, our kids have been going through sleep training. It's been, the sleep training's gone really well, but what led up to the sleep training was a nightmare, and laying on their floor and tricking them into going to sleep and getting them to calm down, and they're in big boy beds, so now they're able to get out and blah, blah, blah. So we put this thing called a monkey lock on. They get one chance, and if they come out of their room, they go back in, you don't say anything, love you, good night. And then the monkey lock goes on, which allows them to open the door like by 4 inches, and they can look out like they're prisoners and blah, blah, blah. So we've talked about that. So how's it going? It's going really well, to the point where one of our sons, Blake, who I thought would have been the last one to like the monkey lock, actually prefers to know the monkey lock is on for some weird wiring thing in his brain.
Right.
But the other night I get up, so I'm sleeping upstairs that night, and we're still split up because one of us feels the need to be up there near them. I got a good night's sleep, I guess, or I was in really deep sleep. They made noise. They're trying to get out. And I'm thinking, I wake up. I'm like, God, it's got to be 6 o'clock. Got to be 6:30. They're probably going to get up at 7 anyway. So I'm going to go in. I open the door. They get out like, you know, animals let out of a cage. And they're running around. And I look at my iPhone and it's 3:45 in the morning. I'm like, oh my God. So I said, guys, boys, you got to get back in bed. It's the middle of the night. This isn't the deal. The deal is you got to be in bed. That's our pact. That's our little sleep club thing. And I put them back in their room. Monkey lock goes on. And as I'm doing that, I said, you know, you guys have been so good all week. Maybe this weekend I'll take you guys to the toy store. You can each pick out a toy. And to show you how manipulative kids are, Wyatt, my son, goes, we've got plenty of toys. I don't need a toy. I just want to sleep in your bed. And then as I put him back in, Blake is looking, his face is smashed in that little wedge, the door's open, and he's got like a little speech thing. He's like, what are you doing to us? I love you, Mom and Dad. Mom and Dad, I love you. I love you so much. Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me? I'm like, oh my God, these kids are going to be in therapy the rest of their lives. 5 minutes later, totally quiet. Next day, they wake up, not a word about it. Like, it never happened.
Oh, yeah. They forget.
Just to prove, it's just not.
Are they better now, though? It's been a week.
They go down. They take pride in it. They go down.
Great.
And we can actually read two books. They have to be in their beds, legs under the sheets, head on the pillow. And then we'll read the two books. And then it's night-night. Goodbye. Love you. See you in the morning.
That's great. That's great. And the monkey lock worked. We should be a sponsor
hashtag
on this
monkey
show.
Lock. How about daddy issues monkey locks?
Well, now, but the thing is, for me, I mean, for us, it's a whole different ballgame with sleep. Like, you're dealing with a 3-year-old. I'm dealing with like a 14-year-old, because now he wants to be up all night, but he has school and he wants to be on his computer and he wants to be in his room on his phone with his friends and da da da. And the LED lights are like all the fucking rage. So our house is like a red light district, pretty much. Like, I have people knocking at my door, like wanting sex. It's crazy. My
Aaron, house. You got to get Aaron out of the front window.
I know that doesn't help. I'm like, babe, put your top on, get out of the window. But, and I want to go to bed. I want to go to bed at 10:30 or 10 o'clock, or at least get in bed. I don't want to be monitoring whether he's falling asleep or not. So now I'm like, fuck, all right, I guess I'll just let him go. And he goes to bed at 1 in the morning. He goes to bed at 1 in the morning. But he's got to get up for school. You know, so now I'm dealing with on like the other side of sleep, which is just a pain in the ass, really.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't end. If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
That's you. Right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break.
So when I was with Kevin Costner, name drop, hashtag, in Iowa, he talked about getting remarried and having kids. And I hope I'm not violating a trust that he has with a conversation we had, but he said something that was right exactly how I feel. He said, I didn't like when people said to me, well, now you're an older dad, you get a chance to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. He's like, I feel like I did it the right way the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that my issue was my new wife wanted to have kids, and I told her it's not about doing it a second time and trying to do it better. I just know what it takes,
yeah.
And I know the effort that it takes, and I know how long it is, and I just don't know that I can do it all again.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. It's not like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. I'm 52. I've got 3-year-old boys. It's not that. It's then they're 4, then they're 5, then they're your son's age.
Yeah.
It's are they're up all night, and then now I'm 65 years old or whatever the hell I am, and I'm like,
God.
I want to go to bed. I want to go to the home. Just wheel me off a cliff, and I'm worried about them going to bed. And it's not like I feel like I'm doing the same job round 2 that I did round 1. It's not that. It's like I just don't know that I have the energy to do it well.
Well, Michelle does.
Yeah, okay.
I saw her last night on ESPN, her little like denim jumpsuit. She looked good.
Yes, yes, I was very proud of her. She did a great job.
She did great. Joe, when do you feel the most vulnerable?
When I'm watching, that's easy. When I'm watching anything on TV that shouldn't make me cry, that makes me cry, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to, all due respect to Justin Baldoni, a former guest, when I am like doing everything in my power to sit on that couch and not tell or let on to Michelle that I am a wreck,
right?
Whether it's America's Got Talent or fucking Ted Lasso or whatever it is, They're the dumbest shit makes me cry, and it's not the easy cry stuff that they put on TV. It's just the good heartwarming story of the person who overcomes, but not even the one that's even supposed to make you cry. Like it's weird stuff, and I'm like, why am I crying?
I know, isn't that strange? There is some sort of trigger that you probably have yet to uncover as to why you get vulnerable and emotional in situations where maybe one wouldn't.
Yeah,
and
she's not crying.
Right.
And she's an easy cry too. It's not like she's hardened. It's not that.
Yeah.
So I look at her, I'm like, is she crying? Is she crying? Is it okay if I cry? Is it okay if I cry? And then I'm like, and trying to hold it in. And the other question is why? I mean, why do I care?
Let me ask you a question. Is it easy for you to look at Michelle in the face, in the eyes, and express your love for her and tell her how much she means to you and, you know, just unsolicited? You know, is it easy for you to do that? Because to me, that's real vulnerability that was very difficult for me to do. I'm better at it now, but that was really hard for me to do. Even with my mom, honestly, you know, with women for the most part in my life you know, my kid's fine, but it's hard for me to sit there and say, hey, you know what? I just want to say you're an amazing wife and I love you so much and I appreciate everything that you do, you know? Can you do that? Does that make you feel sort of like, oh, like kind of cringy and like, oh God, like, eh.
No. I feel bad saying that because that was very open of you to say that.
Well, you don't have to agree with me.
No, I just have never had, and that's probably from my mom. We have always been over the top. Mm-hmm. And when I say it, I mean it. And I would not have gotten married again. If Michelle, in this case, didn't make me feel that way.
Yeah. Well, she can make you feel that way. I'm just saying the expression.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. No, I have no problem saying that stuff to her.
Yeah.
I never have. I've even lied about it.
Even when you don't feel like that way.
Yeah. Like, hey, look, you're driving me fucking crazy right now, but God, I love you.
When was the last time you crapped your pants, if ever? And how often does this happen? This is from, I don't know, some person.
Yeah.
Like crap. I mean, you know, it happens. I've done it. I had one time, I was Rules of Engagement. I was doing the sitcom and I was driving to work and I just decided, I'm going to fart or whatever. Boom. Not good. And I have to get to work, take my underwear off, try to be discreet about it, throw it in the trash, and then sort of ask them for new underwear. And they're like the costume girls, who are still my really good friends, actually. And they're like, why do you need underwear? Did you not wear underwear? I'm like, no, I just need some underwear. And they're like, okay, but why do you need underwear? And finally, I just had to tell him, like, all right, I shit my pants. All right, I shit my pants in the car. All right. I thought it was going to be a little sump, and it went.
Here they are. You're so nosy, you can have them. It's been a long time. I can't come up with like a specific example, except the other day I was downstairs 20 feet from where I'm sitting right now, and I doubled over in pain that I thought I was going to die. And I've never felt that. I've never felt like my whole world just stopped. And I somehow made my way into the bathroom, and literally my feet were off the floor going to the bathroom. So I got there, but only because it was... Oh. Within 10
oh,
feet.
Oh, dude, well, I'm started drinking celery juice again, which have you tried that?
No.
Oh, dude. First of all, it's really great for you. Really, really good for you. But you need to do it consistently.
And I drink my Athletic Greens.
Oh, yeah. Hey. Well, Athletic Greens does it to me as well. But if you drink 16 ounces of celery juice, just do it this week before we do another podcast. And I want to see what happens, because... it gets gnarly. I mean, boom.
Really?
Oh yeah, because it's cleansing. It's fucking doing good things.
I would love to do that.
Yeah,
I've never even heard of that.
No, you got to just straight celery juice.
I live in St. Louis. Do you understand that?
I know, straight celery juice on an empty stomach, though, in the morning, and you're gonna just diarrhea everywhere. You're gonna love it.
Then it's night and night. Did you read the second part and then we'll go?
Okay. Did I read what?
The Mandela effect.
Whoa! What
from the listener hell? Angie? In the latest episode, Joe states the saying is, "If you build it, he will come."
Oh,
he is correct per the producers. The source is Google. Thought you may also enjoy this, meaning you misremember. To use Andy Pettit's lingo.
Right.
Something that you would swear on your life.
Yeah.
That you heard it one way and it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, like, it does.
You heard it like everybody forever. It's if you build it, they will come.
Yes.
But it's if you build it, he will come.
So right.
I didn't remember that correctly, and I had to look it up because we were doing that game in the cornfield in Iowa. It's an unusual phenomenon when a large group of people remember something completely different than how it occurred or never existed. Here's a few. Is C-3PO all gold?
Oh. Oh. Mr. Burns. No.
No, but I would say no, but I feel like no because it looked like he kind of had worn off a little bit.
Well, his eyes aren't gold, meaning, I don't know, I feel like there's some black something. I don't know. He's not all gold.
His eyes are red, aren't they?
No.
Or like a different color.
Aren't
they colored? Like blue or something? Green?
I think they're like white light.
No, yeah, you're right. You're right. But I feel like his body, C-3PO,
mm-hmm.
not R2-D2,
right.
C-3PO looked like some of the gold had worn off.
Yeah.
And it was like kind of silver.
I'm going to look that one up.
And then he had wires and stuff.
Yeah.
Pardon me, sir. C-3PO was annoying. It was like a precursor to Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
Is it life is like a box of chocolates? That's what I've always thought.
Yeah.
Obviously, it isn't, or it wouldn't be on.
Right. Well, what is it? Margo.
I don't know. Margo's having a conniption fit. Is that even a real thing?
I don't know. Well, what is what is conniption anyway?
But have you heard that?
Of course. But like, what is a conniption fit? Like a.
He said, life was like a box of chocolates.
Oh, it was the whole time, not is?
Yes, life was like a box. Life was like a box of chocolates.
You never know what one you're going to get. That's interesting. Do you remember Hannibal saying, "Hello, Clarice"?
I can help you catch him, Clarice.
Hello, Clarice.
But everybody says that. Hello, Clarice.
Hello, Clarice. Yes, probably doesn't say it. I mean, what is it?
Clearly, he doesn't say it or wouldn't be on here.
Son,
I don't know.
Bitch.
Like, what did Miggs say to you?
He said he could smell my cunt. Did she write a note?
I don't know. No, I don't. I'm not. We don't know what's scarier, the fact that we remember Hannibal Lecter saying, "Hello, Clarice," or the reality that all he said was, "Good morning." Good morning.
What are you talking? That's bullshit. I don't fucking...
Do you remember when Hannibal said, "Top of the morning to you"?
Top of the morning to you, Clarice. What do you mean? He said Clarice. There's no doubt about it. I mean,
good morning.
He didn't just say good morning. Maybe he said good morning, Clarice.
Hey, I'm just going with what's being supplied.
Was Sinbad a genie in a movie called Shazam? Who cares?
Yeah, I'm passing on that one. Does the Monopoly man have a monocle? Hell yeah, he does.
But he doesn't, but he does.
Is somebody going to tell me he doesn't have a monocle?
What the fuck? Of course he does. Or is it, it's a magnifying glass, maybe.
Oh, look at you, Mr. I Wanted Family Feud.
That's right.
Going crazy over there. Do you remember Stouffer's stovetop? Hold on. Or more like the fact that he doesn't have one. This, as some suggest, might be a simple confusion between him and the Planters Peanut Company's mascot, Mr. Peanut.
What?
Mr. Peanut definitely has a monocle. Do you remember Stouffer's stovetop stuffing?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to guess it wasn't Stouffer's. Wasn't it Stouffer's Lean Cuisine? I lived on that shit for like...
I don't think it was Stouffer's Lean. What the fuck? Do you remember Jiffy peanut butter? Yes, there is a Jiffy peanut butter. No?
There's no way there's no Jiffy peanut butter. If there's no Jiffy peanut butter, then you and I are not sitting here.
Yeah. I can't with that one. There is a Jiffy peanut butter.
Does the sun on the box of Raisin Bran wear shades? A gun to my head, I would say yes.
I would say yes, too.
People swear there was a Jiffy peanut butter back in the day, but we speculate they're combining Jif with its competitor Skippy.
So there's Jif, not Jiffy.
There's Jiffy Lube.
There's Jiffy Lube.
If somebody tells me there's no Jiffy Lube, then you and I are not sitting here.
Wow.
Wow. This is like hashtag mind blowing.
I know.
And I don't like hashtags. Oh, man. Is there a cornucopia behind the fruit in the Fruit of the Loom logo? I don't know what a cornucopia is.
Cornucopia is just like a bunching of fruit with grapes and apples. And yes, I would say yes, there is a cornucopia.
I would say you're probably wrong.
Behind the fruit in the Fruit of the Loom. I don't know. Jesus.
It's just, I don't know. I don't feel good about it. It makes me question everything.
No, I know. But I like that. I like the Mandela effect. That's what it's called, the Mandela effect.
And Margo says there is no cornucopia. Stovetop stuffing exists, though. It's just not made by Stouffer's. It's a company that specializes in frozen foods that you microwave or cook in the oven.
Right.
Hashtag mind not blown.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, this has been fun.
It was fun. It was a blast, actually.
Okay. Do you remember Carol Burnett tugging on her ear at the end of the Carol Burnett show?
Yes.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Wait. Hold on.
Like, this is literally him incriminating himself. Let it play.
This is our outro. This is our outro.
This is Exhibit A.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that man sitting there in the chair, which is where he's been for his entire tour, the farewell tour. His name is Phil Collins. He was a drummer in Genesis. He became a lead man in the Phil Collins experience. That man watched a person drown. And that man did nothing. He sat there, and all he did was write these words, put it to a melody while somebody was fighting for their life. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, ignorance is no form of innocence here. He saw it. He looked the other way. And he put a drum rip in there that every athlete and fan has ever done in a stadium when this song is played. But he deserves incarceration.
Yeah.
Right here. Here it is right here.
Oh, yeah.
This is where he's telling the guy.
Yeah.
He wouldn't lend a hand.
Yeah. I've seen your face
before. Because he was there and he saw it.
Who I am. I've seen your face before.
He's just a bystander. Right. Just a bystander.
I was there. I saw what you did. Saw with my own two eyes.
So instead of helping that man, I made this song.
I know where you've been. It's all been a pack of lies.
How many times have you been with a group of people that start the drum part
way too early?
Verse too early.
Yeah. but there, the thing is, like, the verse just says what it is. Like, there's no mystery to it.
I'm just saying, I have on good authority. You have to let it go until the drums hit.
I know.
I have it on good authority that he saw somebody watch somebody drown. I'm not going to say where I heard it.
People are still getting antsy. They're like, when is it? It's here, right?
No, it's not here.
What a great song, though. I mean,
just building slowly. It's like Imminence Front by the Who.
What do you think he's gonna sound like singing this song at like 98.
Sitting there doing this?
Yeah. I wonder how he sounds. I bet you he still sounds fucking good.
Yeah. Didn't he break up with somebody, a wife, over fax?
Yeah.
We're getting there.
It's getting close. Here we go.
Here we go. Here we go.
It happened.
There's a thing that he can do, and we talked about this before in this podcast, making an instrument sound like it's you.
Right.
Like, you know when Phil Collins sits in and plays the drums.
Yes.
You know when Chris Botti sits in and plays the trumpet. You know
when Hendrix plays the guitar.
Hendrix played guitar. Eddie Van Halen played the guitar. You know that's his sound.
Yeah.
And it's the same instrument that anybody else can pick up, but it's the guy's fingerprint.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. I know. Well, you know what we should do? We got to go see Phil in concert. Like, we should make a date. And when he's in St. Louis or L.A. or if there's somewhere in between, we should go see him.
I don't care if anybody likes this podcast. I like it.
I do, too.
I do, too.
All right, Joe, I'm gonna suck up my ice cream.
Dessert. Good. Just plant your face in it. Show up tomorrow. Your skin will never look more radiant.
Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.